Italian Wine Podcast. Cin Cin with Italian Wine People.
Hello, this is the Italian Wine Podcast. My name is Monty Walden. My guest today is Elisabetta Gibetti. Elisabetta's winery is called Le Pupille.
Fattoria Le Pupille.
No, it was important, Fattoria.
Fattoria Le Pupille.
Elisabetta's winery is called Fattoria Le Pupille, and it's in the Morellino di Scanzano region on the Tuscan coast, southwest Tuscany. Welcome.
Southwest. It's very south.
Yeah,
it's
very
same coast than Bulgari, more on the south.
Okay, so how did you end up in Scanzano?
It's quite a long story. It started many years ago, when I was very young. I fell in love with the wine, with the countryside, with country life, and.
But are you from Tuscany then?
Yeah, I'm from Tuscany.
Which area?
My mother's family is from the area.
Okay.
While my father's family is from Pisa. So I grew up between Livorno and Pisa. I studied in Pisa.
So that's all on the coast, all on the Mediterranean coast?
Pisa, yes, Livorno? Yes, of course.
And
of course, more on the north of
Scanzano,
Tuscany.
Yeah.
Scanzano is more on the south. Main, not city, so town in the area is Grosseto.
That's the name of the province as well.
Yeah. And I was telling you that studying art history in Pisa.
Art history.
For some years I went on sharing my life between my studies and this small family winery. And then at the end, wine won.
Right.
Wine
when
won.
Was that then? How many years ago was that?
My first harvest alone in 85. I was 20.
I was 20 years old.
Fattoria Pupille used to be a traditional Tuscany farm where family was producing vegetables, olive oil.
Cows?
We used to have cows, of course, Maremma.
The Maremana cow.
It's very famous for cows and horses. Then in the 60s, we started to bottle the first wine. And in the 70s, when the DOC, Morellino di Scanzano, has been created, we have been between the first wineries together with the Cantina Cooperativa, of course.
The local cooperative.
To produce the Morellino di Scanzano. So the first bottles from Pupille were from 78. That has been the first vintage for this denomination.
Really? Yes. So you were absolutely at the heart of the Morellino story.
At that time, we were just a few producers. So in a way, it was also quite difficult to promote this denomination, especially because the nouvelle vague of producing great wines in Tuscany started some years after, in the middle of the 80s.
So that we're talking about further north in Bulgari and things like that, yeah?
Yes, especially because of Sassicaia and Antinori's family, Giacomo Takis, that used to be also our winemaker consulting until 97, something like this.
How do you feel about the changes in the region, seeing as you're one of the pioneers of Scanzano? Do you see investors coming in, doing good things, bad things?
This happened in the early, starting from 2000. A lot of investors, especially families that were already renowned for some other denominations, so Chianti, and then also people from the north of Italy. So there was a kind of
An invasion. But I mean, invaders sometimes they do two things. They want to change the status quo, but they also can bring innovation. So there must have been a good side and a bad side.
It's difficult to say. I mean, at the beginning, this story was something that could really help the area, the Maremma, to be more known,
especially international
countries. I mean, USA. Also Asia markets, but then the problem for me has been that on one side there was a lot of interest for the area, but on the other side the consortium,
the wine growers,
the wine growers were working very well, making very new, nice vineyards. They planted a lot of new vineyards, some very interesting Sangiovese clones varieties. But the problem was more on the side of the consortio that until 2007 was not working so deeply for the
promotion.
Okay.
Yeah, I remember going there in 2005 when I was writing a book, and it didn't seem, the region didn't really seem to have, officially at least, an outward looking vision. It was very preoccupied with internal politics and things like that. Right. And obviously, when you're up against the big guns like Brunello and Chianti Classico or Bolgheri just further up the coast, you know, Morellino di Scanzano was just almost unknown.
This is the problem.
So how do you think you can change things?
I don't know. I have been the first president for the consortium in 1992. At that time, I was really trying to push a lot, but maybe this was not the right time to push because producers were still a few producers.
Well, there were about 20
now
then.
Now it could be more easy in a way, especially because after 2007, DOC became DOCG, so things were changing a lot, especially talking about work in the vineyards, the quantity allowed.
So lower yields, basically.
Yeah, lower yields, and then more focus on the kind of grapes.
So what's a typical blend? I mean, obviously the Morellino is mainly Sangiovese, but French grapes are allowed.
Yeah. 85, it's the minimum percentage for Sangiovese.
Do you think it should be 100% Sangiovese? Always a controversial question, but I've got to ask. What are the pros and cons?
I was producing, until 2 years ago, I was producing a single vineyard, a Morellino single vineyard.
Poggiovalente.
That used to be and still is 100% Sangiovese, but as a Morellino, this was not working so well. So after many vintages, because first vintage for Poggiovalente has been 97, after 14, 15 vintages, we decided to put it away from
make it a Toscana EGT. Yeah.
Yeah.
So basically, what is a flagship wine, or should be a flagship wine, of the Morellino di Scanzano? Because Morellino is the local name for Sangiovese.
Yes, it is.
So basically, you're making a wine from Scanzano, which is 100% Morellino or Sangiovese.
Sangiovese.
You're a famous producer. So really, what you're saying is, it's silly that you have to, or you feel you have to bottle that as just a Tuscan red, a red wine from Tuscany, rather than saying, hey, I'm
IGT.
A Sangiovese.
It became
from
the, IGT.
Yeah.
After many, many vintages, we had.
Were other producers annoyed with you for doing that? Or they obviously respect the fact that it's your wine and you can do what you want with it, but did they think it was a real shame that you moved away from using the Morellino name on your bottle?
The shame was especially for me as a producer, because I was believing in the potential of the area, in the potential of the denomination. And so for all this, even if Pupille became popular for Saffredi, we are a Morellino winery.
So Saffredi is a sort of Bordeaux-Tuscan hybrid?
Yeah, it's been one of the first Super Tuscan to be produced. First vintage was 85, blah, blah, blah. A lot of nice rates, nice scores. But despite Saffredi, we are a winery producing Morellino. So that's why for me it has been like if you lose a struggle.
You lose a fight, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's why.
But a fight with yourself almost, as well as a fight
especially,
with
especially with myself.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want, but then family was pushing me, and then the most important customers, because it was also becoming a kind of limit when we were presenting new vintages to the international journalists.
Oh, okay.
So it's Morellino.
It is confusing for people. I mean, you have to say
in
that.
In a way.
Yeah.
In a way, it's still considered as... we are very close to Montalcino area. The grape...
You're next door. I mean, the boundary is next door, isn't it? I mean...
But until now, Morellino is considered as...
A poorer sister.
For Brunello.
Yeah. Yeah, I think probably the moral of the story is if you're a wine region, don't have Brunello di Montalcino as your boundary, because there's the Monte Amiata, Monte Cucco Appellation, which touches Brunello, and those wines struggle internationally to get the acclaim that they sometimes deserve.
Monte Cucco, it's
Monte Cucco, as they say.
Your
Morellino di Scanzano is also a neighbour of Brunello land, and
there is just a small river that separates the area.
Yeah, you go down the train.
No, it's there's a small river, and then there's the biggest estate for
Brunello.
Brunello is Banfi.
Yeah, you go past that on the train. You get a great view, really, where the boundaries lie. I do that journey often down to Grosseto to the railway station.
It's
a beautiful journey, yeah. If the train works, if it doesn't work, it's a bit. I mean, you have to call up, get a horse or something to bring you up from the coast up to Montalcino. Do you think there's a case for Brunello di Montalcino? Brunello means 100% Sangiovese. Morellino is the local word for Sangiovese in where you are from. Do you not think it would make sense to say, you know what, if you want a bottle Morellino di Scanzano, it should be 100% Sangiovese? Or do you not want to get into that argument? What do you think? Make it easy for consumers. You always know. If it says Morellino, it's always Sangiovese.
Maybe easier for the consumers, of course. But the denomination was going on the opposite side, because until 2007, a minimum percentage has to be 85 Sangiovese and 15 should be local.
Or could be,
should be until 2007.
Well, you had to put in 15% of the grapes.
Yeah. But the 15 should be a local grape, so Alicante, it is traditional in the area, Canaiolo, Cirigiolo. After 2007, with the DOCG, also international varieties, such as the Cabernet, the Merlot, Petit Verdot, everything was included. So this, for me, was the...
A mistake.
Yeah. Because in this way, the denomination was going far from the
further
consumers.
Away.
Also from the consumers' ideas and thoughts, because they are thinking about Sangiovese.
Yeah, because it says Morellino, which is Sangiovese. Yeah.
That's
it probably won't change. I mean, we could talk about this for hours, but I mean, it just seems silly that if I have two vineyards in your area, one plot of Sangiovese, one plot of Bordeaux grapes, I can blend them together, and they can have two names. They can be a Tuscan red, Rosso Toscano, or they can be a Morellino di Scanzano. So why have two? Why did you say Morellino is 100% 100% Sangiovese, and everything else is a red wine from Tuscany? It would make it easy, isn't it? Anyway, I wasn't the sharpest tool in the box when I was at school.
This is too long a story to talk about.
Yeah, okay, we won't get into the politics. I mean, anyway, as I've just put the politics on the table, it's my fault for bringing it up. But anyway, so Poggio Valente, when was Safredi, your flagship. When was the first vintage?
85, but first vintage released on the market was 87. Okay. We never marketed the first two vintages.
Okay.
At the beginning, it used to be 100% Cabernet Sauvignon, and then in the years it changes to become a traditional Bordeaux blend. At the moment, it's 50 Cabernet Sauvignon, 30 Merlot, and 10 Petit Verdot.
It's a good blend. I mean, I'm just looking at my notes here. Silver medal in 18 points out of 20 in the Decanter Wine Awards. I'm head judge and blind. We didn't know what it was. Yeah.
Decanter.
Yeah, look at that.
Which vintage was it?
It was 2009. There you go. Rich smoky cedar, broad and intense, very clear, luminous flavours, elegance, finely judged weight, with good flow, which means it's an easy wine to drink, and it's got a nice... There you go. Just spotted that. Oh, I should go and be your PR guy. You know, I should get a proper job for a change, you know, rather than doing this. So what does the future hold? Who are you going to hand over to in your family? Is somebody going to take on the challenge of running Le Pupille?
I got five kids.
Five children.
Children. They used to be children. The oldest, Clara, she's already involved in the winery, Clara Gentili. She started her adventure in the family business in 2011, very young, has her mother's. And then my son is studying agricultural and winemaking. Between the five, already two. Then we will see.
Do you think they'll make any big changes? Will you let them be free and, you know, if they change things?
Clara, she's already running some markets by herself. Yes, with a lot of success. She made a kind of revolution on the UK market. And then she's working very, very well and very fast in the US. So I'm quite proud of her. quite proud of her. Sure. She's, well, in a way, she's better than me.
Okay, in a way.
In a way.
But not completely. Yeah, well, you had to put that in. I'm a dad. I'd say the same thing. Otherwise, if you give them free rein, they just, you know, you've always got to be a little
so
bit.
It's so very important to leave the kids to how can I say it?
To make their own mistakes.
Yes,
and, learn,
and then to express their own ideas, to feel free to be themselves.
Great. On that note, I just want to say thanks to my guest today on the Italian Wine Podcast, which is Elisabetta Gepetti. From Fattoria Le Pupille.
Perfect.
It's unusual for a man to get things right first time, isn't it? I know it's difficult. From the Scanzano area on the Tuscan coast in Italy. We probably got into a bit of politics today about the blending and all the rest of it, but it's so important. Italian wine legislation gets a little bit more coherent and makes life easier. If you make it difficult for the producers, you make it impossible for the consumers. So if anybody in Rome is listening, streamline some of these ridiculous appellations. You know, if it says Morolino, it should be Morolino, which means Sangiovese. That's my view. I think we agree.
I
can become your PR guy. Yeah, maybe like one day a week or something. I'm not particularly good as PR, you know, but you know, maybe give me a job. They'll probably fire me from this, bring Italian politics up in a moment. But anyway, finally, they'll cut all that, don't worry. If they've got any sense, yeah. Or they'll just cut me, which is probably even easier. So finally, I want to say thank you to my guest today, Elisabetta Gepetti from Fattoria Le Pupille in Morolini di Scanzano on the Tuscan coast. Very nice to talk to you and hope to see you soon.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you to you.
Thank you.
Follow Italian Wine Podcast on Facebook and Instagram.